You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and Woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. The inside of a person.
Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to episode 80 of Dogcast Radio. I hope you like the new opening music, but don't worry, there may be a new theme, but there'll still be the same great show jam-packed with dog-related contents, so let's get on with that. We have an interview about how many people are changing their dogs' diets.
Around about 1 in 8 of the pet owners who we spoke to said they actually just apply government nutritional advice that's issued for humans to their pets.
We also have the Dogcast Radio news and a fiction feature. But before all that, we have an answer to a listener's problem. Listener Katerina Anthony contacted us about a problem she has with her dogs. Here's her email. Dear Dogcast Radio, I have been listening to your podcast and have really enjoyed the advice and information that you have been sharing. In particular, I liked your recent show on separation anxiety, a problem we have experienced in the extreme with our German Shepherd Bismarck. It took about a year for him to get to the point where we were able to get out of the house without anything being destroyed. He is significantly better in this respect, at least, but we still have problems with him in other areas. First of all, let me say that our Bismarck is wonderfully behaved when he is by himself. However, we have two other dogs, a Belgian Shepherd and a Great Dane German Shepherd cross. He is constantly struggling to gain more power in the pack, but with little success. Hercules, our Great Dane mix, is the primary recipient of Bismarck's aggression. Every single time we let the dogs into the garden, there is a sometimes violent struggle as to who goes first. Usually, Bismarck barks incessantly while I sneak the other two dogs out. This happens 5 or 6 times a day, and the neighbours have started to complain about the barking. Unfortunately, Hercules does not challenge Bismarck over who goes out the door, which he doesn't seem to think is very important. However, with food, Hercules is constantly dominating Bismarck, and doing so successfully. Whenever they get into a fight, which sometimes can last up to an hour, with bloody injuries to treat afterwards, Hercules comes out the winner. But our German Shepherd continues to believe he has a shot at the number one place. My question to your team is this. Is there a way to deal with dog-dog aggression, stroke fights for dominance, that we do not know of? We consistently make sure to reward Hercules first, to let him out first, to give him the extra treat, to take him in the car instead of Bismarck, but the message is just not getting through. We're at a loss, and at the moment I'm considering taking Bismarck with me to London while I study in order to remove him from the equation. But it really would not be fair to him, as he needs to have a garden. Well, for help with this, I turn to aggression expert Susie Arger.
We've had an email from Katerina Anthony, who's obviously having, you know, quite bad problems with her dogs. Now, perhaps the first bit, the first thing to tackle was, I mean, in the first place, she seems to have had separation anxiety with him, doesn't she, when... it's hard for them, you know, it's hard for them to be out of the house with him without him destroying things. So he seems quite an anxious dog. So how should she approach that?
Well, the one thing about separation anxiety is it's the definition is just an abnormal fear of abandonment. And a lot of times if dogs don't, I mean, she's got a shepherd cross, she's got a shepherd mix.
Yeah, she's Bismarck is the German Shepherd.
Okay, yeah, Bismarck is German Shepherd. So, I mean, that's a hybrid working dog. That's a herding dog. So whatever amount of exercise people think they give their dogs, it's about a drop in the bucket to what the breed standard takes. And what we do with dogs with separation anxiety, they don't eat out of bowls anymore. They get all their food out of interactive toys where they have to work for it and figure something out. How to move this to get this treat, how to roll this to get this food to come out. And we just triple their exercise because it helps release enzymes that helps balance them. And as well as that, if they don't have the energy to pace or be destructive, you know, then it's just not there. So it's the decompression of the behavior, it's decompression of the energy through lots of stimulation outside of the home, lots of exercise, lots of socialization. You know, you desensitize departures and arrivals. So, you know, don't make a big deal. I don't talk to my dogs for a good five to seven minutes when I come home. I don't even look at them. I don't talk to them. I mean, that's, I walk in, I do what I want to do, then it's my, then I'll come pet you. So it keeps them at a calmer level than, you know, someone walking in, you know, like that. So
yeah,
it gets the dogs all excited, which when he, she gets the dogs all excited, that can cause a dog to redirect on a lower ranking dog in that excitement. Mother's home, mother's mine. Don't get too close to mom, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can go into more into separation anxiety, but it seems like she's gotten a little bit under control. I would just, exercise is the main thing, because dogs with separation anxiety have the energy to be, to have anxiety. And, you know, as in humans, I mean, if we have a lot of anxiety and we go run, we might still have anxiety, but we're pretty exhausted to exhibit that behavior.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting, though, because you're saying physical exercise, but also...
Absolutely.
But also mental stimulation, you know, they've got to think. So it's kind of wearing the brain out as well, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, and dogs can only problem solve for, you know, depending on the dog and its intelligent level and the breed and the breeding and its bloodlines, but they can't problem solve for more than about, you know, 5 minutes in duration usually. If it's something outside like a squirrel, they can go all day long trying to problem solve how to get to that squirrel. But if it's food or something like that, they'll go to trying to move the pieces around and trying to roll it. Then they go through a frustration pattern, and then they'll go back to trying it again, and then they'll say, forget it. So you have to make those type of stimulations, mental stimulations, things that they can figure out within a five-minute period to keep them stimulated to keep doing it, because if they can't get something out within, you know, 5 minutes, it's not chirping or making some squeaky noise that's, you know, in the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're digging something up under the ground. So, yeah, there's a lot of new stuff out there. We just came back from the Association of Pet Dog Trainers conferences, and they had a lot more interactive feeding toys than I've ever seen. So, must mean that there's more and more dogs having separation anxiety.
Yeah.
And this is actually the time of year that dogs have it the most, is September and October, because the teachers go back to school and they've been at home all summer with their dog.
Yeah, so I guess that's going to be useful to a lot of owners. We'll move on then to her other problem, which is, and I guess this is common to a lot of people with even one dog, but obviously more than one dog, which is doors. And she says every single time we let the dogs into the garden, there's a sometimes violent struggle as to who goes first. And in that situation, this Bismarck, who is the German Shepherd, barks and barks and barks. And she's resorted to sneaking the other two dogs out. And this happens 5 or 6 times a day. So what should she be doing with doors, with access there?
Okay. Does she, is she letting Bismarck out first, or is she holding him back and sneaking the other two dogs out?
Well, she says later on in the email, we consistently make sure to reward Hercules first. Now, Hercules is the Great Dane German Shepherd cross, and to let him out first. So she's trying to make Hercules the pack leader, if you like. So it sounds to me as if she's letting the other two out, sneaking them out. And then he's barking and barking, and because
he's the last one to be let out.
Yeah, but if she lets them all out together, he is the one who is pushing and shoving and attacking the other two to get out first.
Yes, he's got some displaced aggression. It's a high excitement displaced aggression. One thing is, we want to make sure and truly find out, is Hercules the pack leader? Because if Hercules is not the pack leader and she's trying to make him the pack leader, then that means the dynamics of the pack is not settled, and which will cause behavior to go on and on and on. So that's the first thing. And the way that you find out if who is the alpha, there's very few ways, because a dog can be what they consider a dominant dog towards a dog that is really higher ranking, but the dog that's higher ranking is so secure that they could care less about certain things. They'll only show that they care or show corrections when it really is very, very meaningful for them. You know, so, I mean, you know, my alpha female doesn't care if another dog goes out in front of her, but she sure does care if, you know, she guards them coming in. You know, so it just depends. But a lot of people try to get the wrong dog to be. And so that's the first thing, though, I would make sure. And how the clearest form of that is to have two dogs behind a fence barking at something. And they're barking pretty vigorously at whatever it is that's passing, the stimuli that's got to be a high stimulation. And then one dog turns around and corrects the other dog. And that's the alpha. Because that dog's saying, "You're allowed to bark. Now that's one time too many for me."
And so is he, that behaviour from the alpha then, is he kind of saying, "Shut up, you're getting on my nerves," or is he saying, "Leave this to me"? What's going on there?
He's saying that I've allowed you to bark because I haven't stopped you yet. I allowed you to run up to the fence with me in high excitement. I've shared this stimuli with you. Now you barked one time too many.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. This is really interesting because we have a Labrador and a Bichon Frise. So they're quite different dogs that, you know, they're... But they have very different behaviours. And I wouldn't like to pick... If I had to pick, I would say the Bichon, who's younger and a female and neutered and smaller. I would say she was the pack leader. Although they're quite soft dogs, you know, so they're not desperate about it. But...
Right.
If there is food, you know, her food is her food. He wolfs his down and then he's eyeing hers. And she will make it quite plain to him, "Back off, this is my food, you know, go away." That's, although it's not that important to her, the food, the fact that it's her food is important. That's my...
Right. Does he continuously do this, or, I mean, does he test this?
No, he's learnt now. It's ridiculous because he's like seven times her size. But what he will do, he's very deferential, and he will lie in the hallway, sort of in the doorway, watching her, but he won't look. Sorry, he won't approach her bowl.
If he doesn't keep trying, then she could possibly be higher ranking. You know, there's different ranks, and then there's an alpha. So, I mean, you might not have an alpha dog. You might have a high-ranking dog in your household that's, you know, doing everything for leadership. But a higher-ranking dog doesn't care about alpha than an alpha does. An alpha controls everything but air. They're extremely strict.
Yeah.
They have a million and one rules.
Yeah. See, I would hope that I was the alpha. And I mean, they are...
You can be the human alpha.
Yeah. Oh, right. I see what you mean. Well, you see, the other thing that they do is his priority is fuss, is attention. So, for example, in the morning, they both know you don't disturb humans in a bed until they're awake, and then you sort of, you can approach. And so once I'm awake, or once either of us is awake, the Bichon Frise is up on her back legs, sort of getting up to have a fuss. But the Labrador will just, not at all aggressively, but he will just walk and sort of knock her out of the way, quite gently but determinedly, knock her out of the way and go, "That's my fuss, you're not having that." And she'll accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like they've decided what their priorities are. They've picked their fights.
Yeah, it just depends. You know, I mean, dogs hold certain things very valuable and important to them. And, you know, resource as a human and a food and bedding. Some dogs will just don't hold it without much value. It's to pick a lot of things apart, you know, it's just sometimes, you know, they're just dogs. They knocked her over. She said, "Oh, I don't feel like jumping back up again right now. He's going to knock me over again. He's big and goofy and, you know.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, a lot, it can be that, or it could be that he knows that if he bumps her out of the way, then he gets the attention first.
Yeah.
So there might not be any ranking involved in that. It's just like each situation, you kind of look at it and you'd have to see body postures and how many times it's done and what her reaction is afterwards.
Mm.
How, if it's dead, I mean, if she just tries to jump up on the bed again and she doesn't, you know, sit there and give him the whale eye and, you know, stare at him like, "How dare you," you know, then, I mean, sometimes it's just typical, you know, having multiple dogs trying to get to your attention. So sometimes we humans try to overanalyze every scenario and try to say, "Okay, this is dominant, this is dominant," because sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's, you know, my dog will take the Frisbee away from the alpha, and sometimes she'll let him.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, if you come into just that scenario and you go, oh, he's getting dominance over her. No, he just comes Frisbee, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, it just, each situation, I always tell people, because, you know, I get a lot of calls on that, and it's just a big word that we use a lot, and it's like a word that we use to put placement and also a word that we use for excuse for dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, my dog's just a dominant dog.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's, and no offense to anybody, but it's just being used more and more now than where it's, you know, dominance is the relationship between two beings. And that's what dominance is. It's a relationship between two beings.
Mm.
And so it's just hard. I prefer to look at the scenario, watch the body language and everything else, because sometimes they're just being dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, so it sounds to me as if it's a quite complex thing to judge. So if Katerina isn't sure, is she going to be best to bring a professional in to actually watch the dogs?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Especially if she has, what, she has four dogs?
I think it's three, because she has the Bismarck, who's the problem, and two others.
Okay, Bismarck, Hercules, and then another dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, if she has a Great Dane German Shepherd mix and she has a German Shepherd, then she has two big dogs. I mean, what you want to do is you want to take away all triggers, because if you allow the dogs to keep having triggers and being reactive, you can never get this behavior to a level where it's managed. It's not extinguished most of the time, but it's managed. You know, so if you can get it to an extinction level, that means you've been managing it for a long time. So if people don't know how to manage it, and they don't know, and the dogs don't have a certain level of obedience, then she's put in a situation that the two huge dogs might get in a fight, and no matter what anybody tells you, they tell you don't get in the middle of the dog fight, what are you going to do?
Mm.
You get in the middle of the dog fight.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just human nature, you know. So then she's putting herself in a risk of being bit, and dogs will turn around and bite you, nothing personal. You're just, they're going to a primal, innate state, which is, you know, they're in fight. So I don't think I would put her in, put that position up so often. And if she's like letting Hercules out first, but this is really not, the behavior seems to be okay, but it's not really getting better, I would definitely get a professional. So they can really dissect it, take it apart, teach Bismarck a solid sit in high excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have to learn to sit in high excitement by himself, at doors, add in one dog, high excitement, outdoors, then the other dog, then high excitement with kids outside, high excitement with doorbell ringing, stuff like that. So when he gets into that mindset, when, oh, we're all going out the door, we're all going out the door, oh, my God, that he's already been working when he's at 0 to 50 instead of starting at 0 to 50. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will start when the dog is to a level of excitement. There's no learning window there, you know.
Mm.
It's like what I tell my clients. It's, I don't know if I guess y'all have some form of Disneyland there. I said it's like when your dog gets to that excitement level, it's like you taking your child to Disneyland and saying, now I want to teach you your multiplication tables.
Yeah.
You know, and the kid's just like glassed over.
Yeah.
What? And so that's what we try to do with our dogs. When the doorbell rings, someone comes over, the dog is in high drive, we're saying, sit, sit, sit. The dog's going, oh, I have no idea what's going on. There's a human here.
Yeah.
He's come for me. Just get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you know, that rings so true, because we recently had visitors, and it was about, I don't know, six visitors, and my Labrador was just like, wow, people, wow, wow, wow. And I just had to put him on the lead because they weren't particularly dog people.
Right.
They didn't want him to touch them. And he was just like, wow. And he can't understand that somebody doesn't want to touch him to begin with. But so I put him on the lead. And exactly what you're describing, you know, I might have been invisible and mute because he just couldn't hear me, see me, anything. And then after about 20 minutes of these people being here, you know, I gave him an instruction and suddenly I could see and I could tell he was listening again. And he was saying, oh, you want me to do this? You want me to do this? And it was like,
so, you,
Yeah, we dropped down a level, you know?
Yeah, the light came on. Oh, you're here. When did you get here?
Yes.
But that's just the thing of working with a dog. You know, we teach people to work with a dog, like from 0 to 10. And you know what I mean by that.
Oh,
when they're laying down, the doorbell rings, and they go from laying down to the highest excitement ever in the matter of a quarter of a second. And, you know, that's, you have to work in between, we call them drives. You have to work in that drive. You know, if you don't work slowly in that drive, you just cannot expect your dog to listen to you in that scenario. It's not fair.
No.
If you haven't trained in that drive, you can't expect them to listen to you.
Mm.
I always tell my clients, I said, wherever you want your dog to listen to you, in whatever scenario, whatever excitement level you want them to listen to it, you have to practice that.
Yeah.
You want your dog to listen to you at a dog park? You practice at a dog park. Don't just take him to a dog park and say, come, he's not coming to me. Well, yeah.
Mm.
He's with all his buddies, you know.
Yeah. It's like they'll do it, first of all, they'll do it in your house, and then they'll do it in the garden. And then, first of all, when you get to the training class, they won't do it there, and then they get used to that. And you think, right, we've got a recall now. And you take them in the woods, there's smells, there's other dogs, you say, come back, and they're like, they don't even hear, do they? And you just think, why don't you do it here?
Right, but you have to train there with long lines. And, you know, there's different, you know, once they've been to some place several times, you know, I mean, they've pretty much gotten all the smells out of there, unless it's a place that's very heavily trapped, where it has a lot of crushed vegetation, which keeps in odor. You know, if they're any type of scent breed, they'd find that more exciting and getting more involved. But usually, if they've been there a couple times, that's fine. But then you go to someplace different, and there's a new squirrel smell, and there's a new mole in the ground that I'm hearing moving, and, you know, there was a deer here, and, you know, oh, somebody, you know, some animal pee-peed over here. And, I mean, it's just, especially if they have prey drive, I mean, they're just going up and up and up, and then we start calling them, and they're like, shut up, I'm concentrating.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the other area that Katerina is saying is sort of sparking off problems is food. Now, in this scenario with the food, the bigger dog, the Great Dane German Shepherd Cross, Hercules, is dominating Bismarck, and he's having a go back. So obviously, maybe the food, you know, is a more important resource to him. If you have this kind of problem, or if you have more than one dog generally, you know, how can you minimize this with feeding them?
Okay. Yeah. One thing, the first thing that we do when we have two dogs that might have any type of food aggression issues or start, or it's, you know, a trigger to start something, is the first thing that we do is we take the value out of the kitchen. A lot of people feed their dog in the kitchen, which makes the kitchen a very high valuable place. It's got their food in it, and at time to time, it's got some goodies on the ground, and there's crumbs on the ground and stuff like that. So I don't know. That's the first thing I would ask her, is where she's actually feeding him. And if they're in proximity to each other, then I feed the dog that has food issues outside.
Hmm.
They have to eat outside. They have to eat in a screened-in area, something. There's a very clear separation from the pack because of this behavior, okay? What you're doing is you're eliminating him gobbling his food and then going to the next dog maybe giving him a growl, and he's going, no, I don't think so. I'm taking your food. And then you have the trigger for fighting. So what you want to do in all aggression, to make it so that, you know, we can get the aggression to go down to a level that it takes so much to trigger, is that we don't allow it to happen. It's a preventative for it to happen. So if two dogs fight over food, then they're not around each other while they're eating. If I have clients' dogs that fight over food, and they're like, oh, well, they don't care about their bowls of food. They only fight over rawhides or something like that. I go, well, that's a lot more valuable to them.
Mm.
So maybe right now while you're working with them, they don't get anything that has a long-term value to them that they can hoard and hold on to and move around from room to room to keep this aggression at that level. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah.
So I would feed him outside, or feed him in another room. Everybody's finished. You always take up empty food bowls. But I'm not sure if she's... Do you feed your dogs in the kitchen?
To be fair, I'm just thinking this. I feed my Labrador in the kitchen, and I used to shut the Bichon in the lounge and shut mm-hmm. the doors. And basically what happened was, the one time I didn't quite latch the door, And she would have been at least one by that point. And so the Labrador got in and went for her food. And she was at the bowl. She had her head in the bowl, eyeing him and growling and telling him. And he was like so taken aback. He was like, oh. And as I say, he really took the message. And even when we looked after a second Labrador briefly, and even with two Labradors, so she was way out of her depth, and we're talking two male Labradors and her. Mm-hmm. And she was just giving no quarter, and she was just like, back off, this is my food. And so we've got two Labradors sitting there with strings of drool, and this tiny little dog going, this is mine.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, size doesn't matter in the dog world. She's telling them, at least that they read the signals. There's a lot of dogs that don't read those signals and keep pushing it. And then they push this dog that has done everything appropriately. It's given all the signals. It's held its ground. Then that dog has a reaction, and then we scold that dog. Well, it's not that dog's fault. Mm. The other dog's fault. You know, it's like two kids in the back seat of a car, and one keeps poking. The other one says, leave me alone. He moves, scoots a little further away from him. Stop, leave me alone. And then finally he smacks him. And so then the mom gets mad at the kid that smacked the other kid.
Yeah.
And the other kid thought was the issue, you know. So we always correct the dogs that are growling or stuff like that, which I'm like, no, they're giving warnings. They're doing everything. They're doing the steps that are appropriate in the dog world.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, since you don't have what you're doing is correct, is that you aren't feeding her in the kitchen, because then the kitchen would become very valuable to her. The other two dogs are like, you know, goofy lab types, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And they don't hold, whatever, huh? And they don't hold anything. Then they can eat in the kitchen. They don't have any value to that. But I don't feed a dominant dog that might have some resource guarding issues in an area where there can be food dropped on the ground, where it has a constant odor of food, where you cook, which is, you know, strong concentrations of smell. We also spend a lot of, you know, the kitchen is the room in our house that we spend the most time in.
Yeah.
You know, you have a party, everybody goes and stands in the kitchen.
Yes.
You know, so we just put a lot of value to that room. So any dogs with any food issues, I try to pick away all the triggers and take values out of whatever it is. And they can't have anything that takes a long time to eat. And, you know, no treats that take a long time. And I'm managing it, and I'm monitoring it. I have seven dogs, and when five of them are in this one room and they're all in different corners eating, I'm standing there. You know, they don't have food issues, but I'm not allowing, well, one dog does, she'll growl and she moves the other dogs out of the room. Well, she can't do that. I'm alpha. Mm. So I just stand there and I look at her. If she growls, I just look at her. I'm like, Isabella. And she'll look at me. I'll go, like that. So I'm not correcting her for growling. I'm correcting her for, I'm not hushing her when she's growling. I'm just letting her know I'm there. Not appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've touched on this before, but it's really important, isn't it? You've told me this before. It's really important that you don't eliminate the growl.
Oh, no, always keep the growl. See, if you can hear in the background here, now I've got a dog, my alpha dog's in my room with this toy that I bought them all, and she's, every time a dog walks in the room, she's growling at them. So I'm not yelling at her for growling. I'm grabbing the toy, and I'm going to put it on top of the fridge. There you go. Now that's eliminated.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we don't have that issue.
Yeah.
You know, so then later I'll bring it back down. If she acts like a little bee again, then I'll take the toy away.
Yeah.
And I don't talk about it to her. I don't say, oh, I'm taking your toy. It's just doing what an alpha dog would do. Just take whatever it is away. It's mine now.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, don't eliminate the growl. The growl is the most, by the time a dog gets to a growl, he's given probably 4 to 5 warning signals, okay? And so it's way up there in the signals, you know. First, you know, there's sometimes a little, you know, quick look to the right where you see, or left, either way. I mean, it's just called an eye shift where you can see a crest of white, but it's, you know how your mom looks at you sometimes and gives you that look?
Yes.
You know that look.
I do.
Okay? That look doesn't change in a dog. They have that look. Mm. And, you know, there's nothing soft about that look when your mother gives it to you.
No.
She can be having a smile on her face and give you that look, and you're like, okay, I did something wrong. And then, you know, they can do just a slight freeze where they are staring and they just freeze for a split second. And then they start, and not motion, but they just, their eyes come back again. They also do that when they're eating. They'll eat and then they'll freeze for a second. I mean, it can be a quarter of a second. Then they start eating again. That's a big warning for dogs. And you got just a little bit of a like a lift lip, a lip lift, where they just lift a little bit of their lip a little bit, you know, and kind of scrunch their nose up a little bit. They're showing a little bit of teeth or just making that little motion. You know, so there's several that go on before the growl. So if you take away the growl from a dog, he's not, the behavior's not being addressed. He's just going, okay, if I growl, I get in trouble. So let's skip the growl and go straight to the air snap or straight to the, you know, the physical pinning or whatever. So, yeah, it's very important not to take a growl away from a dog.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something you can hear when you're not in the room. How important is that?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. Would you say that, you know, with help and support and perseverance, Katerina can get these dogs living harmoniously?
Yes, it's a managed behavior. You don't have to really ask her how, you know, what the fights are like. You know, we need to find out what, you know, are there punctures? Are there, how deep is it? What are the lacerations? Where on the body are the lacerations? Have they gone to an emergency vet how many times? Because that, the amount, a dog knows exactly how much damage they do, and they have control, excuse me, over exactly how much damage that they can do. The depth of the punctures is extremely important, where on the physical body that they bite is extremely important. So those are the questions that I'd have to ask her to say, okay, they've just been doing correction bites, which usually don't puncture skin, usually have a lot of spit involved. They sound horrible, you know, but it's just a bunch of spit where he's grabbed the skin or something. And then there's bites that have done damage. And so depending on how many bites that have actually, you know, the bites actually damaged them and done any deep punctures is what I would tell her. Now, we've got a very serious problem we have to manage, and this is a management that is the rest of your life. I manage my two females. They don't like each other, you know, and they're a management. I can never make them like each other. They're two females, you know. So, and she, I mean, she's got, I'm sure that the dogs are neutered, but that would be one other thing that I would make sure of. And, you know, it's just a managed behavior. They can live happily, but she will have to manage this behavior, and she definitely has to do training. And you have to be careful about what you treat and reward for. You know.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing, and what type of treats that you give. Are you giving them a treat that crumbles into, you know, 1,000 minute pieces that you can't see, but the dog can smell? You know, and then the dog walks by where the dog just ate its treat, and the other dog starts growling at it, and you would think he just started growling at him for nothing. No, he didn't. He walked by his little stash of crumbs.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. No. So it could take a while, but, you know, keep working at it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, I have two dogs in my house, and one's 11 and one's 6, and they have never liked each other. They're just two dominant females that don't like each other. And it's a managed behavior. I mean, it's not stressful for me because I know the triggers and I don't allow them to happen. And one gets in the car and has to stay in the front seat. One has to stay in the back seat, and they don't get to jump from, you know, front to back seat. And that's the way they go for car rides. And as long as I manage that, then that's one of their triggers is the car. It doesn't happen because I've eliminated the behavior that causes them to be reactive.
Susie always offers a wonderful insight into dog behavior and thinking. You can find out more about her at atlantadogtrainer.com. And Katerina, good luck with Bismarck. A tail held up is a sign of confidence. A tail held downwards is a sign of fear.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Be careful what you wish for. A short story by Kate Coldham. Sitting in the window of a pet shop, eagerly anticipating the day when they would be chosen, were three mongrel puppies. The first, his stocky frame already beginning to show the German Shepherd in his blood, the second with the long legs of a greyhound that were somehow too awkward and gangly, and the third a small hairy thing that seemed slightly too scruffy to be a chihuahua. Each day they watched the people who walked by the shop, passing comments on the sort of dogs they thought these people might choose, and secretly hoping that their ideal owner would be the next one to enter the shop. Inevitably, as it did most days, their conversation turned boastfully to the lives they dreamed were waiting for them beyond the pet shop window. "I reckon I'll be picked by an important policeman," began the German Shepherd cross. "My great-grandfather was a top guard dog. He protected some really valuable stuff, famous pictures in an art gallery, according to my mum. She says I take after him. So you'll see, one day I'm going to end up probably guarding the crown jewels or something." The puppy, that partly resembled a greyhound, grinned and stretched out his front legs lazily. "You talk about protecting something valuable. Well, I am actually going to be valuable myself. With my breeding, I'm going to end up the fastest dog ever seen. I am going to win loads of races, and I'll have trophies, and then I'll be worth a fortune." "Well, I don't intend to work at all," cut in the little dog, admiring her reflection in the shop window. "We toy breeds are very popular with famous people. I shall be chosen by a celebrity and travel all over the world. I'll be pampered and bought lots of pretty clothes and taken to loads of parties, and I won't even have to walk. I'll get carried around in a special bag, and the press will follow us, and my photograph will be everywhere." Eventually, each of the puppies found themselves taken away to their new homes, and it was some years later, during a walk in the local park, that the three of them found their paths crossing one more time. The German Shepherd cross, now huge and powerful, wagged his tail enthusiastically, keen to share his story. "I live with a wonderful family," he told the others. "We have a big house and a lovely garden to play in. There are four children who are really nicely behaved, and we even have a maid who tidies up after us." "So you're just a family dog then?" scoffed the smallest of the three. The German Shepherd smiled. "Last month, two of the older children took me to the park for a walk. I was minding my own business, sniffing around at some of the trees, when I heard one of them cry out. Of course, I was back there like a shot and found a group of nasty boys pushing the children around. Well, instinct took over, and I put myself between the family and this gang, snarling at them with my teeth bared. You should have seen them run away." "Big deal. Aren't you disappointed? After all, you always said you would be an important guard dog, responsible for expensive jewels." "Disappointed? How could I be disappointed when I have fulfilled my dreams? You see, I get to protect the most valuable treasure there is, a family that love me." The little dog snorted, but the other dog nodded eagerly, bouncing on his long legs as he took his turn. "I understand what you mean about a family being the most important thing. I live with a lovely old gentleman on the edge of town. I'm his only companion, and we used to go for long walks together all over the countryside." A sad look came into the dog's eyes. "He is in hospital at the moment, so I'm staying here with his sister. But hopefully he will be better soon, and then we can go home together." "Yes, that all sounds very sweet, but you're hardly the valuable racer you said you would be," the little dog said mockingly. The bigger dog smiled knowingly and continued his story. "A few weeks ago, my owner collapsed while we were out on one of our walks. I was distraught, but I knew what I had to do, and ran off to get help. I have never run so fast in all my life. Thankfully, we managed to get him to hospital on time. They said, had he been left much longer, he would have died. But that doesn't exactly make you worth a fortune, and nor have you won any trophies." "Well, actually," the Greyhound Cross said modestly, "I was awarded a medal by the local community for my heroic actions. But more importantly, my owner said that a dog as dedicated and as loyal as me was priceless." "So what about you then?" the German Shepherd Cross asked, somewhat annoyed by the dismissive comments of the toy dog. "You're not exactly hobnobbing with the rich and famous." The small dog pawed the ground, slightly embarrassed, but held her head up high as she replied, "Well, you both may have settled for your normal lives, but I haven't given up on my dreams. I'm not going to stick around here forever, you'll see." D- Determined to prove herself, and angry with the amused expression of her childhood friends' faces, the scruffy Chihuahua cross didn't feel much like returning to her family. After the three dogs had parted company, she sat sulking behind a bush in the park, ignoring the increasingly plaintive calls of her owner as she searched for her beloved pet. When both the daylight and the sound of her owner's voice began to fade, the little dog's confidence began to waver, but foolish pride kept her hidden in the bushes until morning. As the sun rose, she stretched her back and shook the morning dew from her shaggy coat, a plan to travel to America beginning to form in her mind. "At least there I will be appreciated," she told herself. "In Hollywood there are loads of celebrities, and they will adore me." And so she set off, taking the streets that she was sure were leading her closer to her destiny, oblivious of the fact that as the day wore on, the roads were becoming more unfamiliar, that the traffic was getting heavier, and that someone was now taking an interest in her. Finding herself in the main high street, she gazed around, amazed at the dazzling lights that illuminated the shop displays. She trotted over to the nearest window and, putting her paws onto the sill, stared at the array of exciting products and advertising posters, noticing with delight that one even depicted a pretty dog peering proudly out of a designer handbag that was tucked under the arm of an elegant model. "That will be me soon," she smiled to herself. Suddenly she felt herself being scooped up by a pair of large, rough hands and stuffed unceremoniously into a dirty holdall. She wrinkled her nose at the unpleasant smell and indignantly scrambled to her feet to try and find the opening so that she could see what was happening. This certainly wasn't how she expected travelling in a bag to feel like. It was bumpy, as if the person carrying her was running, and there were lots of uncomfortable lumpy things, all hard and made of metal, that bashed against her. Feeling frightened, she pushed her nose out of the small gap in the zip and started to whine. A hand pushed her back in, and a harsh voice growled crossly, "Keep your noise down, you mangy mutt! Someone will hear you!" Not long after the three dogs meeting in the park, the young greyhound Cross was trotting eagerly along the pavement with his owner. "Slow down there, Speedy," the old man panted. "I've only just got out of the hospital. I don't want to end up back in there just yet." The dog wagged his tail affectionately and started sniffing around a lamppost, allowing his owner to catch his breath. As he was exploring, he heard a sigh and looked up anxiously. The old man patted his dog lovingly on his head and smiled sadly. "Couldn't bear it if you went missing." He indicated a poster that was pinned to the lamppost. "It must be awful losing your dog like that." Enjoying the affection, but not really understanding the reason, the dog moved closer to his owner and looked up at the poster. To his amazement, he saw it had on it a photograph of his childhood friend, the little dog who wanted to be famous. "Seems like she disappeared during a walk in the park," the old man continued, almost to himself. "Don't reckon she'll turn up again. Probably dognapped by some unscrupulous person looking to make a quick profit." He shook his head sadly and set off along the pavement. The dog trotted behind him, looking around inquisitively, although unsure of what his owner was talking about. Then he noticed the poster wasn't just on this lamppost. As he looked around, he could see that there were the same posters on all the lampposts, lots more pictures of her, up there for everyone to see. "Well, imagine that," he thought to himself happily as he and his owner turned towards home. "It looks like she finally got what she wished for."
A dominant dog usually stands tall when meeting another dog, although he may roll on his back to reassure the less dominant dog. It's that time of year when many of us are trying to cut down on cookies and cakes and eat more fruit and vegetables. But did you know that lots of people are swapping bones for broccoli in their dog's diet? To find out more, I spoke to Emma Hollier from Liverpool, Victoria.
Well, what we've actually done is looked into the diets of the dogs these days, and we found that sort of one in three pet owners are feeding them up to three portions of fruit and veg a day, and there's a real sort of general trend towards giving dogs more vegetables, more vitamins, and more sort of diet supplements.
Yeah, yeah. Now, where's that coming from then? What's causing it?
Well, I think there's numerous reasons why this is happening. There's a bit of a celebrity trend for dog owners to go to send their pets vegetarian. So you've got Paul McCartney, he's got a vegetarian dog. Alicia Silverstone, the American, she's got a vegan dog. So very unusual in that respect. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also sort of perceived health benefits, perceived cost savings, and even ethical reasons.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously people are doing it because they're thinking it's better for them, and so it's better for the dog.
Well, interestingly, in the research, around about 1 in 8 of the pet owners who we spoke to said they actually just apply government nutritional advice that's issued for humans to their pets, so, such as sort of eating 5 portions of fruit and vegetable, which we're all quite familiar with. They sort of apply it to their dog in the same way they would apply it to themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you found some quite interesting attitudes, because as well as, you know, they're thinking it's healthier and cheaper and more ethical, some of them are thinking that organic pet food, you know, is a waste of money, aren't they?
Well, around 30% of the dog owners we spoke to said they felt that organic pet food was a waste of money. And perhaps I think in these sort of, you know, hard times and people trying to save a few pennies and thinking they can give the dog sort of more scraps from their roast dinner or whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose if it's good enough for you to eat, it's got to be good enough for the dog.
Well, I think that's the main part. It will be pet. I think there's probably actually not a huge number of pet owners who are just giving their dog purely vegetables.
No.
It's more likely to be scraps from the dinner table and then that side of things, perhaps in sort of meaty gravy and that kind of things. That obviously, otherwise, I think a lot of dogs wouldn't go for just plain vegetables.
No, no. Although I have to say, ours like, and it's odd things, ours like potato peelings.
Potato peelings.
Yeah, and as I'm stood peeling potatoes, particularly our little Bichon, she'll be there going, "Hey, can I have some?"
Well, I mean, absolutely. I think there's all sorts of, you know, unusual things. They say garlic is very good because it acts as a natural flea repellent. So that's sort of perhaps unusual one you might have in your Italian. So, you know, perhaps a bit of chicken or something like that. But onions is another one, but not too many of those are quite bad for your dog. So you need to be a little bit careful.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we need to be sort of careful with?
Well, I think it's common sense in the main part in terms of if you do want to feed your dog fruit and vegetables, you know, things like citrus fruits, berries can cause a stomach upset, and of course you don't want that. I mean, things like potatoes, carrots, peas, those sort of things that probably, you know, you're eating or your family is eating are probably the kind of things that will go down a little bit better than perhaps more unusual things.
Yeah, yeah. And you also found sort of the flip side of that is that not so many dogs are existing on a meat only diet, are they?
Well, actually, according to the research, just 1 in 4 of the UK's dogs now exist on a meat-only diet. So obviously, that's 1 in 4, so it's a really small number. I think the vast majority of people are sort of feeding their dogs a mixture of sort of vegetables and also tinned food, which has all the sort of vitamins in it. We've also seen a big increase in people taking vitamin supplements and giving them to their dogs. So obviously, there is an issue there. People are sort of concerned about health. And the sort of problems you would get without a number of minerals or vitamins in your diet.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I must admit, when I read that, I was quite surprised. And then I suddenly realised that I give my dog cod liver oil. And he just has one tablet a day. For his coat, he's a black lab, and he can tend to get dandruff. So although I'm sort of sitting there quite surprised people giving vitamin supplements, and I suddenly thought, well, you do it, you fool.
Well, actually, it's one of the bigger reasons is a glossier coat is one of the reasons for giving sort of vitamins and perhaps increasing the number of vegetables in a dog's diet. I mean, health problems, and around 21% of people we spoke to said it gives their dog a better coat, digestion, and of course loss of weight, because I think people do worry that their pet is a little bit overweight, particularly sort of in January after the Christmas sort of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess at this time of year when we're all thinking about, oh, how could I eat better? How can I change my diet? Maybe it's a good time to look at your dog's diet as well.
Well, I think we're all a little bit more health conscious in the sort of January, and we're all sort of slimming down after the sort of party season perhaps. And I think people just tend to apply what they're doing, their lifestyle, to their dog. So perhaps there'll be lots of dogs out there going for longer walks than they have been doing in the December sort of month.
Yeah, and if you can save a bit of money as well after Christmas, all to the better.
Well, absolutely. You know, we're all feeling the pinch, so January is a good time to look at things like this. And I think, you know, if we're having sort of eating at home a lot and having a lot of homely meals, you know, your pet can benefit from that as well. And you don't need to spend quite so much on tinned food.
No, no. Can you tell us, is there a website where people can find out more about this research?
There's more information on our website, which is www.lv.com.
If you've been inspired by the new year to improve your dog's diet, do make sure you do some research on what it's safe for him to eat. If you do turn your canine from a podgy pooch into a dashing dog, do send us a photo and tell us your story. Submissive postures when meeting another dog include lowering the head or body, licking the other dog's lips, or looking away.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Shortly before Christmas, Princess Beatrice's dog, Max, a cream and sandy Norfolk Terrier, went missing while he was being walked in Windsor Great Park. Apparently, Beatrice was understandably extremely upset and set about posting as many missing posters as possible in her area. The Queen herself was reported to be searching the park for her granddaughter's dog, and the Duchess of York offered a substantial no-questions-asked reward for the return of her daughter's pet. Despite being desperate for his return, he was not mentioned in the Queen's Christmas television message, but there is good news, because early on in the new year, Max was found.
And, sticking with the royal theme, in February there is to be an auction in New York of 13 collars and leads worn by the pugs that belong to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. The accessories have a variety of inscriptions, including one which simply reads HRH the Duchess of Windsor, and others with the couple's Paris address.
Another royal hitting the headlines over the Christmas period was Prince Edward, the Earl of Wessex. Edward was on a shoot when he spotted two of his black Labradors both trying to pick up the same pheasant. He was caught in a series of photos published in a British newspaper, running towards the dogs, brandishing a heavy walking stick. He then brought the stick down several times, although it is unclear, and his representatives have declined to clarify the subject, whether the stick actually connected with either dog. What is clear from the dog's body language is that they are frightened, cringing away from their master. After a number of complaints from the public, the animal protection charity, the RSPCA, is looking into the event.
Meanwhile, in America, the big dog-related Christmas event was the release of the film Marley and Me. The film was the highest-grossing film on Christmas Day, taking over $14.5 million. The film is based on John Grogan's best-selling book of the same name, which tells the story of his lovable rogue of a dog, Cream Labrador Marley.
Let's just hope that the popularity of the film doesn't lead to a surge in people wanting a Labrador without knowing quite what they're taking on. They may be sociable and friendly, but labs need company and exercise. They can be incredibly boisterous when young, and they shed a lot of hair, which finds its way onto clothes, furniture, floors, and anything else that comes near them. It's charming to watch characters on the screen coping with a delinquent dog, but it's less charming to live through. And in reality, in his youth, Marley very nearly ended up in rescue.
And on the subject of rescue dogs, as the credit crunch hits home around much of the world, rescue centres are filling up fast. However, if the dogs can be transported to the right area, they can be found homes. When a Tampa, Florida shelter put four pups up for adoption, an unbelievable 30 people registered to adopt them. Luckily, all those registering could end up getting a pup, as the charity has 28 more puppies that are approaching an age when they can be put up for adoption. All of the 32 young dogs were taken in from Angel Dog Rescue in Georgia, that was overflowing with dogs to the point it had to stop taking any more. It just shows that sometimes a dog's biggest problem can be geography.
Let's hope in 2009 more dogs find themselves in the right place at the right time. And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
A play bow is an invitation to play. The dog dips his shoulders low while his rear end and tail stay high. His mouth will usually be open in a relaxed grin. We've rung in the new with the new year and changed the opening music on Dogcast Radio. Do you like it? If you do, or if you don't, let us know. Did you have a great Christmas with your dog? Buddy's present was a football, which he burst and began to chew up by New Year's Day. And Star had a sturdy rubber toy on a rope, and between them they destroyed the rope, so we'll have to re-thread the toy onto a much more hard-wearing piece of rope. But they both had fun biting and scratching the wrapping paper off. They then both developed a concept that all wrapping paper conceals toys for dogs, and set about trying to help everyone else unwrap their gifts. I have to say they were disappointed with the emerging goodies in the majority of cases. What good is bubble bath or socks to a dog? Ah, well, till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What's the difference between a dog and a biscuit? You can't dunk a dog in your coffee.